with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! To 2 minutes past the hour, I was tied up getting the last buttons pushed there and missed the top of the hour by a couple of seconds. I'm horribly embarrassed. I'm also Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, conversation radio unlike anything else you're likely to find anywhere else, terrestrial, internet, satellites, or transmissions into aluminum foil helmets. You pick. It is Friday on the front porch. It has been a beautiful day here in what is left of Appalachia. A gorgeous day. Cool, kind of high 40s, low 50s. Just nice. Which makes it a perfect evening for kicking the dirt off your boots and coming up on the front porch, grabbing yourself a hot cup of tea, hot cup of coffee, or a blazing hot swig out of the jug over there with the corn cob stopper in it. I think that stuff's about 150 proof. The reason they call it white lightning. Friday on the front porch is, of course, reserved for all manner of conversation. And you are welcome to bring to the table that which is moving you. What's moving me? Oh, we got some fun stuff this evening. And some serious stuff. Stuff that's got to be gotten to. And a few interesting things from the email bag. Let's do that. Let's start with the email. What do you say? You know, just the mail. I think after 15 years or so, we can stop calling it email. It's just the mail. You're going to love this. I was sitting here minding my own business earlier today when an email... I almost did it. An email. I got an internet yesterday. No, Ted Stevens is dead. Oh, that'll be a problem. So I got an internet about 10 minutes till 4. You know, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. And this note came from someone who calls himself Chadwick Rumpensteiner Bachman. Who knows? It is merely signed, Listener. I listen to your show on iTunes at work, right after Beck in the morning and Rush mid-morning. Agnes, where's the tequila bottle? This can take some work. Right after Beck in the morning and Rush mid-morning. Now, I don't know what that says about our correspondent's time zone, but you'll surely figure it out. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you Shirley. So many things to say, but my main concern is your flat-out hatred and name-calling. Oh boy, I haven't had an email accusing me of name-calling since I left behind all those weird little wingnuts. See, there he goes, name-call. No, those are adjectives. Weird little wingnuts over in America's fifth smallest radio market. Your flat-out hatred and name-calling. You guys laughing yet? Today, rebroadcast, You said you would celebrate the death of Pat Buchanan. Why? This is the difference between liberal shows and conservative shows. I used to be addicted to Air America, but then I realized how hateful and mean the hosts were, never even listening to the other side of things. How can you be such an angry person as to celebrate death? I never have heard that kind of talk on Beck and Rush. Glenn Beck will be the first to say how the president needs to be protected from harm, but you seem to wish harm on anyone that disagrees with you. It's too bad, the liberal media didn't spend this kind of energy on vetting Obama. As they are the current Republican candidates, we would be in a much better place under McCain. Thank you, signed, listener. Now, I'm not going to call listener any names, but there are some serious disconnects in this email. Not the least of which start at the very beginning. Rush and Beck are not name callers. Feminazis? Anybody? I mean, that is Rush, right? Yeah. Feminazis, environmental wackos. Yeah. But, you know, us liberals, we're never even listening to the other side of things. Well, no listener. The problem is, we did. Yes, we did. We gave a listen to what was being offered by the Hannity Jobs and the Beckerheads and the Flush Flemballs of the world, and recognized right away that they were hacks. Now, you've got Beckerhead, who is a recovering drug and drunk addict. You've got Limbaugh, who was so deep in the miserable depths of opiate addictions that he drove himself deaf. And then there's the Hannity job. And I would not want to live in that man's household, that little pipsqueak Napoleon wannabe. But we don't listen to the other side of things. And we name call. Particularly, I guess what set listener here off was me saying that I would, in fact, relish the day that I got to deliver the news that Pat Buchanan had gone to his long home, his reward, which will hopefully be a spit over an eternal, you know, brimstone fire in hell. If the Bible is to be believed, that's kind of got to be where he's going. Maybe that's why there are asbestos half-soles on those Brooks Brothers shoes that he orders twice a year. Maybe. But I guess listener never heard when Glenn Beck exhorted people to slaughter members of the Tides Foundation. Or when Glenn Beck said that he would like to personally murder Michael Moore, or paint a bullseye on Nancy Pelosi. Missed those episodes. Yeah. But you see, we're held to a higher standard, we liberals, we progressives. Because we are, you know, I think there's a tacit understanding in this email that we are, in fact, smarter than they are, and therefore should be above such conduct. But the thing is, what the right wing takes as name-calling are merely adjectives. Now, if I say, you know, that Pat Buchanan, he's sure a poopy head, that's name-calling. If, on the other hand, I refer to him as a bigoted, racist, homophobic misanthrope who has done far more evil in the world in the time he has been on it than he has done good, that's analysis. It really is. And he is evil, And he is bigoted. And he is misanthropic. And he is homophobic. That's why he's out there selling books in which he admits to being those things. The guy's on record as saying Hitler had some pretty good ideas. But because of the high standard that liberals are held to, we cannot even say that we look forward to the day that we can announce the death of Pat Buchanan. Tough standard. High standard. In me, it creates the urge to suggest that one look up that old verse that says, "Physician, heal thyself." Because, you see, long before I was ever behind the microphone doing this, long before Tom Hartman or Ed Schultz, well, no, Ed Schultz was behind the microphone, only he was being a Rush wannabe back then. He was a right-winger. That's before he had his Road to Damascus moment. Before anybody, with the exception of Mike Malloy, was doing what would be called liberal or progressive radio, Rush Limbaugh was out there slinging mud for all he was worth. And, of course, the very history of what we now know as talk radio began with right-wing blowhards, all afire over the communists and the socialists and the reds and the pinkos. That is practically the entire history of talk radio, going back into the 50s, out on the West Coast and so forth. It's very much documented. Go further back to Father Coughlin. Yeah, there was a real Sunday walk in the park to listen to. But us liberals, you know, we hate everything. We're like Mikey. Jim Anderson. Jim, our buddy, email noting, "But you're Blanche! You are!" From whom? Rumpelstiltskin? Yeah, close enough, Jim. The Rumpelsteiner Bachman, I think, was what it was. Bachman? Really? Bachman? That's fun. So, there's a start. You just love getting the email. I thought I'd run all the right-wingers off, but apparently there are a couple of brave ones yet lurking out on the marges of civilization and listening in. And that's why I'm not being really hateful and flaying the skin off this person's bones. Because maybe they're learning a little bit. Not a lot. Right-wingers can't learn a lot. You know, you can always tell a right-winger, you just can't tell them much. But you get the idea. This, by the way, speaking of email, comes in from our good buddy John. "Bob, I've been hearing you talk about troubles with fundraising. Once again, it's the continuous problem our side faces. We don't have the big money donors willing to front protection money like the right does with Limbaugh and Beck, not to mention the host of second tier types like Dinesh D'Souza." And, you know, every time I hear Dinesh D'Souza, I just expect that I'm going to hear some sort of military martial music. But that was John Philip Sousa. "Na na 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 na." Dinesh D'Souza, Breitbart, and that campus watch freak. "I have to believe," says John, "that we're more powerful than that. They've got the money, but we've got the numbers. It's funny how the Horn fundraising works a lot like the Occupy folks. There's a core group out there every day, every month. But some also come and churn where people come by or contribute as they can. There's power in that. I have to believe it. I'd like to offer another challenge this month. I'll match, dollar for dollar, the first $50 in contributions tonight. For those considering a contribution tonight, here's a chance to double your dollars. Please don't think that any one contribution is too small to matter. That's the sort of idea the 1% wants us to believe. John closes saying, "The horn isn't a luxury for me. It's a necessity." And I love the places that John goes in this note and the things to which he connects. No one in the Occupy movement is demanding that they be allowed to change places with any of the vile walking human vulgarities of the 1%. They are merely asking to live in a society with a somewhat more pronounced aspect of basic fairness, where, for instance, everyone pays their fair share. The 1% dodge taxes to the tune of paying, literally, 1% in taxes. More on that in a minute. Here at the Horn, we have survived. We outlived Air America because we weren't operating on what would become known as a 1% model. Any given month, we have a set amount of money we try to raise to keep things going around here. And we don't go for more. Now, if everybody here was getting paid, you would see emails coming to you perhaps from the Horn, from an email blast serve, sort of like you may see as I see in my emails from time to time. "Dear Bob, we fell a little short last month, but this month we've got great hopes. We only fell $20,000 short last month, but we're sure that this month we can raise $150,000. I don't think I've got it in me to tell you I need $150,000 because I don't need $150,000. On the other hand, if John Fox and Ben Birch and I and everyone who makes all of this go, yeah, we probably would be trying to raise $50,000 a month. But we've been operating on a model similar to what Occupy does for years, talking about meeting needs, not meeting desires. So, our good buddy John will match dollar for dollar the first 50 bucks in contributions that come in tonight. And I'm very thankful for that. And I can say that there is a strong likelihood, well, it's been exceeded, John. I've had people tell me that I shouldn't announce it when it happens, but I can't do that. I have to tell you when we've been successful. That is not to say, well, we're a long way from November and we finished October in one of those holes where we have to look down to see up. But thank you. Thank you very, very much. No, I mentioned the 1% because there's a couple of stories that sort of tie together out there this evening that need a little light shone on them. Over at Think Progress, a post today notes that in the year 2009, 1,470 households in the United States. That's not even a decent-sized town. In 2009, 1,470 households reported income of more than $1 million, but paid zero federal income tax on it, because there are tax loopholes and shelters created for the 1%. Since the mid-1990s, the Clinton administration, the tax rate for millionaires has gone down by 25%. Fully 25% of all millionaires in this country pay a lower tax rate than the average middle-class household, according to this post at Think Progress. The one percenters are paying 1%. And that's an eye-opener. The one percenters, of course, have stock portfolios. And they pay no income tax on the appreciation in value in those portfolios. They pay no tax on the transactions that lead to that wealth in those portfolios. Spencer Baucus of Alabama, a member of the House of Representatives, is the poster child for that. He is stone cold busted, except, you know, not by law enforcement or anything. He's not been forced to do a perp walk, as he should be. He traded on insider knowledge that he was given because he is a member of the House of Representatives, and made a fortune shorting the market when he knew that the market was about to tank. No perp walk. It has, however, inspired Senator Kristen Gillibrand of New York to introduce a new bill that would actually allow the Securities and Exchange Commission to prosecute members of Congress for insider trading. She appeared on CBS's Early Show to discuss her plan.
How do you police the free flow of political intelligence or insider trading, whatever you want to call it? How do you police this among Congress members?
Well, if it's illegal, then they won't do it. And we have disclosure now. The reason why they were able to do this 60 Minutes article piece was because this information is publicly available. But it has to be illegal, just like it's illegal for everyone else. It's not right for someone who gets access to inside information to be able to profit from that. And members of Congress have access to a lot of information about different laws that are being written, who will be regulated, who will get certain government contracts. And they should not be able to profit from the position that they hold as a public servant.
Seems simple enough, right? Well, no, because the Speaker, the Weeper of the House, John Boehner, says that it's not necessary to have that kind of a law.
There are already guidelines for congressional investments, Boehner said. I have not made any decisions on day-to-day trading activities in my account, and I haven't for years. Is that Pinot Noir or Merlot? Damn you! I told you that I was tired of that California Merlot. I told you Pinot Noir or nothing at all. You do want a job, don't you?
Yeah. Ah, we don't need that. So, a little on-the-ground story from the 1%. We were occupied. Our time was considerably occupied over the last week and part of last week as well. With the stunning horror that is not a tragedy, we went over that, that seems to emerge drip, drip, drip from Happy Valley in Pennsylvania. No sense in recapping it. You already know the particulars. getting weirder. Today, Joe Paterno's son announced that Joe Pa, at 84, has lung cancer. We might perhaps find out, well, I don't know, the people, never mind, don't say it, Bob, don't say it. You'll get another email saying that you're just mean. That word has a lot of meanings, however. But, and this is the big but, not like that. It turns out, and I don't know if you've seen this or not, but I was kind of when I did. Last July, Joe Paterno deeded his interest in his home, which he purchased for $58,000 in 1969, and which has appreciated in fair market value to $594,484.40. This past July, just a scant few months before the excrement struck the fan blades, with the news of the horrors that Jerry Sandusky has allegedly perpetrated upon God knows how many little boys. This past July, Joe Paterno, who is a one percenter, transferred all of his ownership interest in his home to his wife. The transaction value was $1. Plus love and affection. Is that estate planning? Had he heard? Was he worried? Did he know then that he had lung cancer? Is it that far advanced? If you've got lung cancer, do you continue coaching in the upcoming football season? Or, suspecting that the excrement was about to strike the fan blades, did he make this transfer to protect assets from potential lawsuits? It is a fair question, not a cruel one. Because, you see, if Joe Paterno was not a member of the 1%, if Joe Paterno was, in fact, just another struggling schlub out there, you know, like you and me, and he did something like that, and then, say, entered a nursing home, that transaction might likely be deemed fraudulent and done for purposes of defeating asset marshaling by the government. Because you see, when in fact an old person begins to avail themselves of something like long-term care, unless there is some sort of serious estate planning going on, the state can seize assets as an offset to monies spent on said long-term care. And such a transaction would have been overturned to allow the state to get at them. If, for instance, Joe Paterno was a member of the 99% and had just had an illness that brought about crippling medical bills, which are in fact the primary cause of a great number of the bankruptcies that are filed every year in the United States, and he had made that transfer, upon examination of the transfer in bankruptcy court, it is highly likely that a bankruptcy judge would have held that transaction to have been fraudulent and done to defeat
any attempts by the creditors to get at assets. Now, bankruptcy law is a very complicated field, and I am not a bankruptcy lawyer. I am not a lawyer. But anyone who has been through that kind of misery knows how careful one must be in one's filings. But since Joe Paterno is a member of the 1%, ho-hum, huh, yawn, right? Yeah. I guess. Do you see the reality of the inherent unfairness of the nation in which we presently live? This is profound. If you are in the 99%, there is the gaping maw of hell waiting for you around some unforeseen corner. If you remember the 1%, however, well, you know what? There are, well, don't worry, Coach. There are devices we can use to protect your assets, especially in case someone spills the beans about Coach Sandusky's horseplay. Isaac feeling a little bit acerbic this evening. He says, Joe Pa's cancer must have gotten it from the shower. Ooh. Brutal. Marty noting, Paterno, not the first person to do that type of asset transfer, nor will it be the last. The question is, will it be examined? And it certainly should be. We asked the question on the program the other night how the Second Mile Foundation was still managing to stay afloat. Well, apparently the quick answer is it ain't. The New York Times reporting that in an article by Mark Vieira, Joe Becker, and Pete Thamel. Is nobody named Smith anymore? The local charity, founded by Jerry Sandusky, the former Penn State defensive coordinator who earlier this month was charged with 40 counts of sexually abusing young boys. Bless the poor old New York Times stodgy old heart. Penn State defensive coordinator who earlier this month was charged with 40 counts of raping little boys is preparing to fold as it tries to reconstruct what it knew and did about any suspicions or allegations against Sandusky over the years. David Woodall, the chief executive of the charity known as Second Mile, said in an interview Friday that the foundation was seeking to transfer its programs to other nonprofit organizations. The Second Mile's leaders are looking at a limited number of organizations that could and would carry forward the foundation's work with disadvantaged youth. This is probably also part of a mad scramble on the part of the Second Mile Foundation's board to evade liability. To be frank, to be honest. A lot of calls probably being made to a lot of insurance or a couple of insurance carriers saying, hey, you know, we're going to be covered on this, right? Please? I mean, we're the 1%. You got to help us. We need your help. You are our only hope. Yeah. So there's that. That's how the 1% takes care of its own. Just saying. Now, beyond that, it is Friday on the front porch, and there is a good deal of fun we can have. It was not fun last night. Little Timmy Jebo won another football game. Granted, he was playing the Jets. You know, I think John Fox is a cagey head coach. He only started starting Little Timmy Jebo when the schedule began looking like it might be favorable toward him. I mean, really? His first start came against Miami? Please? But we do try to have some fun on Friday on the Front Porch, and this... Okay, well, that's not... This is fun. It's always fun when a right-winger gets outed, no, not that way, for the nasty creatures that they are. Headline over at Wonkette. Insane anonymous internet racist turns out to be Florida GOP politician. You know, if you get an email from me, it says it's from Bob Kincaid. If I comment on a website, it's Bob Kincaid. And a lot of you are the same way. Why can't right-wingers do that? The St. Petersburg Times, Kirsten Boyd Johnson reports at Wonkette, has discovered that one of the more frothing racist loons littering the comments segment section on its news articles with vulgar diatribes is actually an elected Republican office holder. Surprise, 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 Sergeant Carter. And it's a nasty man by the name of Norm Roche. R-O-C-H-E. Although if you care to spell it some other way, it will probably be neither offensive to me nor inaccurate. He is a county commissioner for Pinellas County, Florida. And he has been hiding behind an anonymous alter ego in order to cast aspersions at his fellow members of the Pinellas County Commission, among others. Kirsten Boyd Johnson writing at Wonkette that these types of reports are the only thing on the internet more common than those annoying five secrets for a flatter tummy ads on what seems like every blessed website there is. She notes it's newsworthy because in addition to the bucketfuls of hateful slop that Norm Roche dumped under his brilliant commenter handle, Reality, he also went around anonymously insulting all the local officials in his county, which includes St. Petersburg, that he apparently just pretends to work with when he isn't feverishly spewing bile at them online. This from the St. Petersburg Times news article. After a Times report on... Well, okay, let's back up. There is apparently a significant cadre of right-wing crazy in Pinellas County, Florida. There's a lot of right-wing crazy in Florida generally, but apparently it is in full flower in Pinellas County. Because, as I think I may have mentioned, I heard about this Tuesday night on the radio box in the vehicle as we were heading over to do the Dr. Bill Prism American History Chat Series. The County Commission of Pinellas County, Florida, recently voted to make sure and remove all the fluoride from the drinking water systems of, yes, Pinellas County, Florida. Fluoride.
you know, the fluoride that the John Birch Society has been pissing and moaning about since, the 50s? Yeah, that fluoride. This fluoride
Mandrake.
Yes, Dad?
Have you ever seen a commie drink a glass of water?
Well, yeah, I don't say I have.
Vodka. That's what they drink, isn't it? Never water.
Well, I believe that's what they drink, Jack, yes.
On no account will a commie ever drink water, and not without good reason.
Yes. I don't quite see what you're getting at, Jack.
Water. That's what I'm getting at, water. Mandrake, water is the source of all life. 7/10 of this earth's surface is water. Why do you realize that 70% of you is water?
Oh, God.
And as human beings, you and I need fresh, pure water to replenish our precious bodily fluids.
Yes.
Are you beginning to understand?
Yes.
Mandrake, have you never wondered why I drink only distilled water or rainwater and only pure grain alcohol?
Well, it did occur to me, Jack, yes.
Have you ever heard of a thing called fluoridation? Fluoridation of water?
Yes, I have heard of that, Jack, yes. Yes.
Well, do you know what it is?
Yeah.
Do you realize that fluoridation is the most monstrously conceived and dangerous communist plot we have ever had to face? Come and play a dead game, soldier. That's nice shooting, soldier.
You know, because he keeps the machine gun in the golf bag. Give it to him, Jack.
Mandrake, come here.
You calling me, Jack?
Just come over here and help me with this fella.
I haven't had very much experience, you know, with those sort of machines, Jack. I only ever pressed a button in my old Spitfire.
Mandrake, in the name of Her Majesty and the Continental Congress, come here and feed me this bell boy.
Jack, I'd love to come. But, what's happened? You see, the string in my leg's gone.
You ever get the idea that General Jack D. Ripper would be just the perfect teabagger? Mandrake, in the name of Her Majesty, the Queen and the Continental Congress, get over here! Fluoridation, Mandrake. The most insidious commie plot. Yeah. So, Norm Roach is one of those people who was insistent about denying science and getting the communist fluoride out of the Pinellas County water system. According to the vote taken by the commission, as soon as the current supplies of the fluoridating chemical are gone, there will be no more fluoride in the Pinellas County water system. After a Times report on fluoride in children's health, October 18th, Reality's comment included, Out of all the underprivileged folks they could interview, they picked one that needed an interpreter? Think about it, Mandrake. Oh, I mean, so I added the Mandrake part. Think about it. Then, last year, this Roach guy complained about race pimps. This is a quote from a sitting member of the Pinellas County Commission, elected by the teabaggers and the family values Republicans. And for God's sake, learn how to buy clothes that fit you so you don't walk around looking like an idiot thug trying to hold your pants up. Whitey isn't to blame for your ignorance. Now bear in mind that right-wingers do not have original ideas. These are all echoings. These are merely right-wing sounds bouncing off the stone wall of the minds of this Roach guy. Proof? He referred to St. Petersburg City Council member Carl Nurse as having made pinheaded comments in a city council session. Pinheaded comments. Now, apart from the fact that it was Harry Truman who first really brought that phrase into the common usage when he used to refer to Richard Pinhead Nixon, who's the most current user of that word? There's only one person. We talked about him this week. He was the star of Moran Monday. Right. Bill O'Reilly. Liberal pinheads! But thank God, of course, right-wingers never call names. See, I'm a name caller for saying that someone is a bigoted, racist, homophobic, pro-Nazi misanthrope. I'm a name caller. Bill O'Reilly, pinhead, nah, not so much. Let's see. Mr. Roach has also had a lot to say about achievement levels inside the Pinellas County school system. Do I really got to read this? Yeah, I got it. And this kind of ties in with our story last night about the mother who's going to be doing, who is doing 3 years hard time fed for the heinous crime of trying to feed her children. And one of the most stirring, touching phone calls that has ever come through the horn, the comments from Cassie as she offered them about her own experience. Commissioner Roach wrote the following. When a white kid and a black kid sit in the same classroom and are given the same information, tasks, and assignments, and the black kid fails, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the teacher, the system, the unions, the funding, or the school. Start with a 70% out of wedlock birth rate. Now, a person who had any shame whatsoever upon being outed this way, upon being stone cold busted, would say, well, you got me. And then quietly resign from office and go, in his case, to a teabagging meeting and scream about precious bodily fluids or something. Right? Yeah, I mean, that's really the only appropriate response in that. Just go away. Tell us about it, Mr. Roach.
Mandrake, I suppose it never occurred to you that while we're chatting here so enjoyably, a decision is being made by the President and the Joint Chiefs in the war room at the Pentagon. And when they realize there is no possibility of recalling the wing, there will be only one course of action open. Total commitment. Mandrake, do you recall what Clemenceau once said about war?
No, I didn't think I knew that. Yeah.
No.
He said war was too important to be left to the generals. When he said that, 50 years ago, he might have been right. But today, war is too important to be left to politicians. They have neither the time, the training, nor the inclination for strategic thought. I can no longer sit back and allow communism.
I mean, you can just hear this, can't you? You can just hear Commissioner Roach sitting around in the St. Petersburg sunshine talking to some of his fellow teabaggers. Yeah.
I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion, and the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids.
It's incredibly obvious, isn't it? A foreign substance is introduced into our precious bodily fluids without the knowledge of the individual, certainly without any choice. That's the way a hardcore commie works.
Just another day at the country club in Pinellas County. But no. A person with a sense of shame, a person with a conscience, a person with any human dignity about them whatsoever would, yeah, retire, go sit by the pool at the country club, stack up the Singapore slings, the zombies, the Mai Tais, whatever. Grain alcohol and rainwater, probably. And just talk among his own about the God-dreaded communist conspiracy to sap our precious bodily fluids. But not Commissioner Roach. Oh, hell no. Roach defended the comments as his free speech right and a necessity on the Internet in the Internet era. He said using an assumed name removes the risk that comments are dismissed for partisan reasons. See, that doesn't hold water. Because when you start talking about, it's all them brown people and their 70% out of wedlock baby rate. I know your politics. I won't dismiss you out of hand because of your name. I'll dismiss you out of hand because you're a loon. You're just another hate-fueled, sick, twisted, antediluvian, right-wing, nut-job, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freak. That is name-calling. Jeebus. And just in case you were wondering, that wasn't all that Mr. Roach went blathering on about. Let's see. He says St. Petersburg is defined by thug shootings, prostitutes beatings, and social service recipients. God. And you know, he didn't just vote on the fluoridation thing. He led the charge, the teabagger charge against fluoridation. I sure do wish I was making this up, but I'm not. Here, let's go to, and granted, the video's a little bit old, but let's go to a clear and concise statement of teabagger values, shall we?
Barack Hussein Obama. and been jealous of the NAACP, John Conyers, Maxine Waters, Charlie Rangel, and all the other criminals in the Congressional Black Caucus, and Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and all the Negro race pimps out there. On behalf of the...
Wait a minute. Roach is a teabagger, and this is not Roach. This is some other guy named Garrett Wilson? Grady Warren. Well, whatever. GW. Wait, where have I heard that before? Race pimps. But Roach used the same phrase, didn't he? Why, yes. As a matter of fact, he did. Remembering, of course, that no right-winger, no teabagger has ever had an original idea. These things are generated and circulated.
Barack Hussein Obama. And been jealous of the NAACP, John Conyers, Maxine Waters, Charlie Rangel, and all the other criminals in the Congressional Black Caucus, and Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and all the Negro race pimps out there. On behalf of the Tea Party, we are sick and tired of being called racist when our mission is to educate legal American voters on the most conservative candidates to consider voting for. That's it. We are good Americans. We are moral Americans. We are religious and non. We are taxpayers. We are civil to our neighbors. And we are law-abiding citizens. We love this country, and we are willing to fight for what's right. Not political correctness, not for the Republicans, not for the Democrats, and especially not for the liberals. The Tea Party is tired of blacks, Negroes, Muslims, and Hispanics, especially the illegals, calling us racist for trying to save the America that we love.
Woo-hoo!
So on this third day of November, 2010, I declare a jihad on political correctness and the groups out to destroy America.
Thanks, Grady. So glad you're not a racist. You know, with all that talk about the race pimps and the Negras. Yeah. But it's nice when you've got a face to put behind all of that right-wing racist teabag and filth that you do see out there in the comments section of practically every... honest to God, if there was a story on the New York Times website about Sasha and Malia Obama's kitten, there would be a Roach to talk about. Well, you know it's true. You know it's factual. It just is. But it's Friday on the front porch, and it's time for me to stop filibustering, and it's time for you to have your say. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you're on hold, well, shucks, please stay that way. We'll come to the phones right out of the break. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Johnson bought the farm, put a needle in her arm. That's the way that it goes, that's the way. And her brother laid her down in the cold Kentucky ground. That's the way that it goes, that's the way. That's the way that it goes. Everybody's buying little baby clothes. That's the way that it ends. Though there was a time when she and I were friends. Then Miranda ran away, took a cab and left L.A. That's the way that it goes, that's the way. She She was busted, broken flat, and had to sell that pussy cat. That's the way, baby, it goes. That's the way. That's the way, baby, it goes. Everybody's buying little baby clothes. That's the way. Brightest ones of all, early in October fall. That's the way that it goes, that's the way. While the dark ones go to bed with good whiskey in their hands. That's the way that it goes, that's the way. Joe's back in the tank, and Jim Russo, I tell Frank, that's the way that it goes, that's the way. Did he throw her down? Well, did she leave him for that swell? That's the way that it goes, that's the way. That's the way that it goes. Everybody's buying little baby clothes. That's the way that it is. Though there was a time when all of us were friends. When you lay me down to rest, leave a pistol in my vest. That's the way that it goes. That's the way. You miss my gentle touch. Did I hurt you very much? That's the way that it goes. That's the way.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182. 82.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes after the hour, and yeah, that's the way it goes. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It's Friday on the front porch. And let's find out who's pulled up into the rocking chairs. What do you say? Yeah, good idea. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, hell.
Oh, yeah. Yes, Mandrake.
Yes, this is General Jack Ripper calling from Burpleson Air Force Base.
The inimitable Burpleson. Peace is our profession.
I had a friend. Well, now let's come on now. Just let's not step onto any toes, Bob. You know my background, okay?
I'm sorry. That's what it says at the gate to Burpleson.
Well, that's basically what. That's what it says on a lot of bases besides Burpleson. I mean, you know, that's.
Honest to God, Jim, I never knew. I thought that was just more Stanley Kubrick.
No. I mean, when you start talking about the Air Force and things of that nature, well, let me put it this way. I have my own background and interest at heart, okay?
I copy.
Okay, so, thank you. You know, pursuant to what you were saying about children born out of wedlock, what was the percentage among blacks or whatever?
70%. That's at least what that right-winger said.
70%. Well, you know, I can understand to a certain extent why certain people say that. I mean, I was brought up by my father to believe that, you know, if you're going to have children, you ought to be able to, number one, take care of them, and number two, it would be preferable to be born with benefit of clergy and not on the other side of the blanket, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
And as far as people who have children and they have no means to support them, and they continue to bring children into the world for whom there are no means of visible support except institutions and prison, it's one of my main reasons for being a staunch supporter of Planned Parenthood.
True enough. The fact
yes,
that
my dad would tell me, and my father was a good man.
Oh, you've told stories about him, and he sounds like he was indeed, and that being even faint praise.
Absolutely, and one of the things he always tell me: if you can't afford something, you can't have it, and you should not try to have it if you can't afford it or take care of it. And he was referring to children, not of blacks, but of everybody. He was not a racist.
No.
And, you know, I think one of the major problems of this world is the fact that there are simply too many people in it.
Well, at 7 billion, I think that argument's pretty much. Well, I don't know, Jim. To you, me, to folks in the Horn family with more than a handful of functioning brain cells, I think it's a foregone conclusion that 7 billion people on planet Earth are probably a few billion too many. But remember, there is a segment of the populace here in the United States that thinks there aren't enough of us. Consider those weirdos in Arkansas, the Duggars. You know, they just had their 20th baby. 20, Jim.
My God, could the mother ever get out of bed?
Well, you know, You go straight for the Groucho Marx line. You know, I love my cigar, but I take it out once in a while.
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is the thing about, you know, having children with no means to resource them. This is why I hit all these nut people who are screaming about abortion and this, that, and the other. And you know, the use of condoms and the use of birth control.
But those right-wing religion industrial complex types, that's all eugenics.
Now, that's an interesting science in itself, because I think we both know where it started.
Sure. And but they're that way. I can't go a week without getting some right-wing interview pitch email about somebody else in the right wing wanting to talk about that Hitlerian eugenicist Margaret Sanger. I'm not kidding. Once a week. They're convinced that there aren't, but bear in mind, they are convinced that there aren't enough white people in America. And there is an undercurrent to that. There is a subtext to that, Jim. And that is the reality that this country will no longer be a white country in about 30 years.
But this is the reason these people are saying that the black people are having all these children out of wedlock on purpose as to outnumber the white people. Is that what you're saying?
That's not what I'm saying. It's what they say.
Well, I'm just asking you. Let me put you in another case. Is that your interpretation of it?
Yes.
Okay.
There are not many social aspects of right-wingery in this country, Jim, that you cannot trace back to fundamental, elemental racism. Take, for instance, the debate over Darwin and evolution. The prime reason that the right-wing in, religion industrial complex and pasty-faced, doughy Baptists and Methodists and fundamentalists of all stripe, the reason that they so thoroughly reject the idea of evolution is that when you accept evolution, Jim, you have to come to grips. Well, best put this way: when we were on, you know, when I was down in what I think of as kind of your neck of the woods a couple of weeks ago, when I was down along the Atlantic, the South Atlantic coast of Georgia,
right,
and we were on that boat heading out to Sapelo Island. One of my hosts looked at me and said, and there was a wistful tone in her voice. She said, "See, if you leave Sapelo and you head due east, the currents will carry you to the mother country." And then she kind of realized she was talking to a white guy and kind of gave me a look, and I said, "No, no, that's okay. It's the mother of us all." And it is. Everything starts in Africa. There's no getting around it. Human life began there, and if a right-wing, fundamentalist, pasty-faced, doughy, white, conservative, family values type embraces evolution, that means that they have to come to grips with the fact that however many thousands of years ago, their skin was as black as anyone else's. Because it's true. Human beings only lose the melanin content of their skin by moving into far northern climes where it is no longer of any evolutionary benefit.
Right. Well, they don't enjoy hearing that.
No, they don't. It drives them mad. It drives them crazy. And to that end, they are scared witless. Well, no, they were witless before they were scared. But they are, I guess you could say that they are socially traumatized by the idea that 30 years from now, it's not going to be their little white country anymore. That's why Pat Buchanan has that book out talking about the end of America. It's why the Republican Party despises Social Security. Because, and would like to kill it, and Medicare, and any other thing that is a social good in this country, Jim. The Republican Party would like to kill it before we become a majority-minority country. Because they don't want them to have it. It's Rick Blaine watering his garden with the champagne instead of letting the Germans drink it. The Republican Party feels that way about Social Security, Medicare, whatever social safety net good is out there. I mean, Jesus, that cracker white federal judge in Mississippi gave a woman 3 years hard time.
After she had made restitution,
and for nothing more dire or heinous than one mother's desperate desire to feed her children.
That is indeed regrettable. And that particular judge, I would put on the same plane with the Nazi judge that condemned all of the people who tried to kill Hitler back in 1944. Roland Freisler, remember him? You've seen him.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen you, certainly you've seen films of the trials of those people who tried to kill Hitler.
And remember, this is a judge also who would not enter a judgment order that granted judgment against his former employer, his former corporate employer.
I wonder why.
They are soaked in their white privilege. They refuse to take account of their white privilege, and they are damn sure not going to give it up without a struggle. They would rather, really, this is scorched earth, okay? They would rather burn the crops in the fields than see those people get them.
Well, Bob, I can say this. You can ask the, any veterans of the Russian Army during the Great Patriotic War. That was an extremely effective means of defeating the Axis when they invaded that country.
Right.
And, you know, what I'm saying is simply to redefine the effectiveness of that type of resolve. And it is very hard to defeat and very hard to overcome when you get to the point where you are going to believe in scorched earth and that type of thing. It is effective, and it has worked.
But consider the malevolence that has to go with it in this instance.
Oh, I am, and that's the reason I brought that. I'm responding to the scorched earth reference that you made. Please proceed.
No. I was simply saying, you learn a lot about how these white bigots feel about not just themselves and not just the persons that they deem other, but the way they feel about America. There is an America that lives in their head. There's an America that is white, that in which people of color know their place, so to speak, and in which they can hide from anything that they decide that they don't like. And it's just sad, Jim. It's sad, it's tragic, and it is infuriating. Because they are commanding the tide not to come in. But the tide's coming anyway.
But yet these are the same people who do not believe in Planned Parenthood.
Right.
I wonder how many whites are having children without benefit of clergy and are trying to balance the population factor. Do you have those figures? How many?
I don't have them in forms of figures, but when it comes to social welfare services, the vast majority consumption of them is by white families or white single-parent households. That's just, I mean, it's overwhelming. It's overwhelmingly white. But that doesn't, but that's not where the focus is for the right wing, because they need their other to be sufficiently other as to be demarcated from what they deem true America. Because as you know, growing up in the South, and as I know, having grown up in the South, that there are epithets that are used for persons of color, and then there's that catch-all for anybody who isn't of color but is deemed beneath the white power structure. And you know what that is. It's a three-word phrase. Po' white trash. And it's the it's the Yules in To Kill a Mockingbird. It's the Cunninghams. It's anyone deemed not patrician enough. But they will save their hate for the ones who aren't po-white trash.
But not apply the same action to themselves.
Absolutely not. You know, it's almost impossible to get women's reproductive health services in Mississippi as it now stands, even without that hateful Handmaid's Tale amendment that they tried to pass. But when a woman from a powerful or relatively powerful, economically empowered family gets in the family way and they don't want to be in the family way, well, they simply take her somewhere where it is more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And thus it has always been. One of the great failings of liberals and progressives, I think, is that they don't, because I do and you do and we do, they don't recognize to the fullest extent they should the subtext of bigotry and hatred and racism that underpins the entire right, so-called right to life movement. It's there, and perhaps they just prefer not to see it.
Well, they can't see that. And if you try to point it out to them, then they will call you every name in the book, including murderer,
baby killer.
Baby killer, and all the other stuff. And, you know, it's, like I say, and I said on this program many times before in the years that you and I have talked, that I've always believed that, number one, if you cannot afford children, if you cannot take care of them, then you should not have them. Or you should use a preventative means.
But remember, the right wing wants to eliminate access to those preventative means.
Well, exactly. And that's the thing, that's the reason I'm repeating that point. I mean, you know, it's a matter of fact. Number one, there are too many people in the world in the first place. Number two, you have these people who are the proponents of no type of birth control, no type of family planning, but yet they are promulgating the very thing that is going to eventually destroy this planet.
Yes.
I mean, we have too many
people. And again, it's crops burnt in the fields. If they can't have the planet, no one can have the planet.
Well, I tell you, there's enough bigotry all around for everybody, that's for sure, because it's just an increasing polarization, and I don't see any end to it. I really don't.
I don't either, because the other side does not wish an end to it. One of the failings of liberals and progressives, one of the reasons that we got our butts kicked by the likes of Limbaugh for something approaching 20 years before we ever started really doing anything about it, was because we have this live and let live street gym. And we didn't want to push back, and we just wanted to be left alone. And it has become so abundantly clear now in 2011 that the 1% are not going to leave us alone. That finally we are beginning to realize that they must be opposed in order to be defeated.
Well, can you offer a solution? How can you oppose them? How can you defeat them if they are so hell-bent and determined to eliminate any type of opposition?
I think the Occupy movement is a brilliant first step. They are being forced to, the privileged bunch are being forced to confront, even if they will not publicly or consciously admit it, they are being forced to confront on some level the fact that we know what they've been doing, and we know the damage they are doing.
But what will you say will be their reaction formation to this Occupy movement? Because the Occupy movement can only last for so long. You know that. I know that.
I don't know that we're in agreement, Jim. There will be a certain degree of dormancy over the hard winter, but I think it's going to be back, pressed down and shaken together when the leaves bud on the trees, and it will remain a viable force, far more vocal and far more viable than the teabaggers, well up to the election, and I'm not sure, but past the election, until some sort of political relief is done.
Well, I wish I could share your optimism, but I don't know, because money has a way of getting its way, and these people have a way of getting their message across a lot more effectively than anybody else does, particularly your Occupy people and this, that, and the other. They seem to be in the ascendancy at the present time in spite of the Occupy movement. I mean, the Occupy movement is something that the news media is bringing to the point, and they are now bringing to the point such a light that it will be eventually phased away. Now, whether there is rebirth in the spring, I don't know. I don't share your optimism there, and I'll be the first to tell you. I would hope that it would bring some type of political awareness to the scene, and people will begin to realize exactly how unfair things are. And what I've always said, the unfairness of Wall Street and K Street. I hope it will. But Bob, I just don't have much hope in that right now. I guess I've...
Well, no, I understand. I understand your cynicism, Jim.
Well, I've always been sort of cynical about a lot of things, and we've discussed that before. And And, you know, unfortunately, stupidity and inequity and bad things have a habit of getting its way. You know, it's just like one of your callers last night said, well, they could have stopped Hitler if they wanted to. Well, look back on that particular scene in Germany in the late 20s and early 30s. There are only two things that could have stopped Adolf Hitler. One would have been a bullet or a bomb, and they tried 42 times to kill him, right?
That yes.
And secondly, the only other thing that could have prevented him from coming to power would have been a non-depression situation. Because when we had our depression in 1929, it moved over into Germany, and that's when everything that had begun to recover from the First World War had begun to recover. And, of course, the depression in Germany and the inflation of the Reichsmark, I think it was $4 trillion to $1, that added to Adolf Hitler and his...
And that's the reason that I don't think we engage in some sort of Pollyanna optimism about Occupy Jim. I think it has to be a sober optimism, because there are other factors that are presently engaged and on rushing even, that suggest you could have a nexus of events similar to what you had in 1930s Weimar Germany. Well, if the euro goes straight to hell and takes Europe with it, I don't even want to think about it.
Well, that's the reason I've always said time is cyclical, not linear. And people, things have a way of, or events among people have a very nasty way of repeating themselves, or giving power and means of...
And there will forever be a paucity of people with enough understanding of history to desire not to repeat it.
Well, unfortunately, but they always do repeat it. And that's when they do give power into the hands of a gentleman or a man or whatever you want to call him, or a woman, whomever, who comes to power with an unusual solution and will call upon all types of means to get it, whether it's race baiting or whether it's... accusations of things that happened in the past, like the Germans Hitler blamed the Versailles Treaty and the backstab theory and all this other stuff, or the communists trying to take over and this, that, and the other. I mean, you will always...
But do we not have enough metrics? Do we not have enough forensics on that particular time period that if one is a... conscientious.
Pay attention to.
If one is a conscientious citizen, shouldn't one be on the lookout for anyone who preaches jingoistic nationalism? Anyone who preaches that whatever the problem is, it is the fault of the other. I mean, there are little boxes that we can just check off and say, nope, no, we're not going down that road. Now, granted, the fact that the entirety of the Republican field running for president manifests those check boxes, a fear of the other, jingoistic nationalism, the other 12 defining characteristics of fascism. You can look them up.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, these things have a way. Number one, people don't pay attention to metrics. Number two, they don't pay attention to history. And number three, these jingoistic nationalist types of things have a way of appealing to individuals, particularly those individuals who are untaught, who do not realize the lessons of history. And I don't think I have to say more on that, and I think you'll have to agree with that. Well, you don't have to agree with it, but I mean, it's simply...
No, there is no... had he had a little more time, or whoever was doing the transcribing, been a little bit more perspicacious, I to this day, I think the Bible verse would read, "The stupid ye have always with ye."
Well, yeah, you do, but I mean, going back to, like I say, let's go back to Germany in the 1930s. There were lots of intelligent people who believed in Adolf Hitler and his movement. There were even Jews for the promulgation of the 1935 Nuremberg Laws who believed in Hitler. There were even people like David Lloyd George, the British Prime Minister of World War I, who believed in Adolf Hitler. There were a lot of people who supported Hitler. And that.
Well, look at Charles Lindbergh. Well, I've just been visiting with that charming Mr. Hitler.
I mean, Charles Lindbergh was taken over by what Goering was doing with the Luftwaffe, because, you know, Lindbergh was a pilot and they used him. Just like they used anybody they could, the Duke of Windsor, he's not much of an excuse in my opinion, but they used him, tried to anyway. And, you had camps in this country. That before the war, and like near Yorkville, New York, and in parts of New Jersey or in New England, there were actual Hitler youth type camps that were being, where they got these boys together just like they did in Germany. There was like a Hitler youth in
this. Jim, remember, the father of a present sitting Supreme Court justice was head of the Mussolini League in New York City.
Yeah, fascism. And it appeals to, I guess, the baser instincts of once in humanity, but they wrap it in so many different flags and so many different religious beliefs that people are taken fooled by it. And then again, there were Germans in Germany who realized that, you know, that Hitler was leading them right down the primrose path to destruction, because people realized that he would not stop with anything except hegemony. And that's what he wanted, was world hegemony. And of course, the elimination of world Jewry. And that was one of the drums that he continued to beat, were the fact that, you know, the Jews were the cause of their misery, and, you know, it was just, and the thing about it is, they adhere to the KISS principle. Keep it simple and keep it stupid. And repeat it over and over and over and over again.
And you see, that's one of the things that I try to be cognizant of in watching, for instance, and I'm not trying to get pushback via email or anything, but I am cognizant in all, and it's much more right wing than left, but in the Occupy movement and our insistence on hammering at the banks, just because I know history, Jim, and just because you know history, we recognize that drumbeat against the banks has been out there before, and in other times it was the Jew bankers. And we have to be on the alert when that kind of thing begins to rear its head. You hear, like I said, you hear it far more. You just hear it more. I haven't heard it coming from the Occupy movement. You hear it. It's in the sort of backbeat strains of the right wing screams about the Fed. It's in the complaints about. It's in Ron Paul. Hollering about how he wants everybody to be able to buy a gallon of gas with a silver dime. It's there. And it's certainly bubbling under the surface throughout Europe right now.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, Europe could unite, and Europe could undergo the same type of things that it may have gone back in the 30s if the economic and political conditions...
And they have a new group... They have a new group of minority Middle Eastern peoples upon whom they can foist their fears of the other. Where the right wing used to love to go hammering away at Jewish people, now they have the Muslims. Whether the Muslims be Algerian Arabs or Turks, or Syrians, or Saudis, or whomever, the right wing undercurrent of Europe now has them to scream at.
Well, let me mention this to you, and you may find this interesting. I'm sure you probably know about it, but during the latter days of World War II, say from 1943 on, when the German army was being bled white on the Eastern Front, whom did Himmler recruit as an auxiliary type of SS?
I don't know.
Muslims in the Balkans. There were Muslim SS divisions.
Oh, Croats.
Whatever. And he said the reason he supported that is, number one, well, they had to abandon their so-called standards of eugenics and racial purity because the SS person initially had to trace his ancestry back to 1750. But he said, well, you know, the Muslims have this type of religion in which they will die for and this, that, and the other, and they're very warlike people. And he used a vast human pool to recruit SS divisions that wore head fezes. And, you know, and because of the problems between Arabs and Jews, Himmler used that as a means to recruit his SS.
And, in fact, sowed seeds that continue to bear a sort of toxic fruit in their own way.
Yeah, they did. There you go. Well, listen, this has been an interesting conversation. You've got other people to go on, and I just wanted to surface a few issues about, number one, my belief in Planned Parenthood, number two, my hope that you're wrong, or you're right, excuse me, about the Occupy movement. I hope it will bear fruit in the spring. And number three, that the people will be so much less hateful toward one another than they are now. But I have never seen such polarization, and I have never seen such hatred, and, you know, it's just incredible how this country has changed during my lifetime. It's just horrible.
I can imagine, Jim, that it is, because it's rather shocking to see in mine, and you've got a couple of years on me.
Yeah, I have a few, and, you know, like I say, there are lots of institutions, civic, civil, military, whatever, that have been useful. The Air Force is one of them. Unfortunately, they've had to do things which they had not enjoyed doing.
And sadly, the religion industry has made inroads more into the Air Force than any other branch of the armed services.
Air Force Academy and this, that, and the other. Now, what's going on there? I mean,
It's been going on for years. The best way to track it, Jim, is to sign up and get the newsletters from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, MRFF.org, or just Google Military Religious Freedom Foundation.
Okay.
It's run by a man who has been on the show a couple of times in the distant past, named Mikey Weinstein. He is a former Air Force officer.
Mm-hmm.
His son or sons attend or attended the Air Force Academy, and he has very, very methodically and meticulously documented, especially in the Air Force, the creeping influence of fundamentalist right-wing Christianity. And when you get your mind around it, it is frightful.
Well, those schools are supposed to be non-sectarian.
Oh, but the Air Force Academy is very sectarian.
Well, what about the other service academies?
There are problems there, but they are not nearly to the degree. I would say the Air Force Academy is worst, then West Point, and then the Naval Academy. And I don't even know if the right-wing religion industry have gotten around to working on the Coast Guard or Merchant Marine academies.
Well, we'll have to see. But listen, thank you for your time.
You have a good evening, Jim, and a great weekend.
Same to you, sir.
Bye now. If I haven't mentioned it lately, yes, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation is a tremendous resource for keeping up with the fundamentalization, if you will, of our military. David in Tennessee noting the other thing that could have stopped Hitler? Had Woodrow Wilson and the British stood up to Clemenceau and stopped the onerous terms of surrender and financial settlement after World War I? The damned French wanted to treat a defeated Germany the same way they treated Haiti, wishing to be free 100+ years earlier. And there's something that happens in the middle of that space. It's along about 1870. It's the Franco-Prussian War, in which the victorious Germans imposed onerous financial burdens upon the French. and seized French territories, Alsace and the Lorraine. And, of course, the almost the entire history of state of nation-state Europe is conduct like that. And it was in the attempt to break that that Woodrow Wilson made his proposals, and both Lloyd George and Clemenceau made a mockery of them. Even Moses had only 10 commandments, they said. Because they had just an overarching, aching desire to punish Germany out of existence. History. Fun. Huh. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I wanted to call and talk about something, but I'd like to make some comment about the what the guy said about the babies born out of wedlock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my neck of the woods, there's a lot of babies born out of the wedlock, and in my neighborhood, which is mostly white, there's a lot of blacks there too, but anyway. Most of the girls out here have had a baby by the time they're 15, at least one. A lot of them start out at 13. And
similar circumstances here in Appalachia, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's elsewhere too. Yeah, and a lot of them, they get these guys that are charming and they're on drugs and all, and they're in and out of jail if they have them at all. And I had a neighbor that all of her grandchildren, she had 10 grandchildren, and they were all out of wedlock, two girls.
Good God.
And anyway, one of them went with this, that she and I became good friends, and, you know, her kids just loved them. And, but when her boyfriend would get out of prison, or out of jail, and come, he just destroy everything. They would have no lights or anything because he was a druggie. And he would never go to jail for drugs. He would go to jails for writing checks and all that sort of stuff. But, and just to show you, you know, how things have kind of changed, at least from when I was growing up, the little kids, you know, here the daddy was coming out and they'd say, "Oh, daddy's out of prison." Yeah, they'd be jumping around happy and, you know, didn't think a thing about it. You know, used to, people wouldn't have.
And these are people across all ethnic spectrum, right?
Right, right.
Lots of little white girls.
Yeah, and a lot of them are now out here also. And I'd like to say something about the kids that are born that don't have fathers or don't have mothers. Some of them, now my son's best friend, his mother gave them up for another man. She had just had a baby, and she gave up her, I think it was the four children, and the one with the baby, she gave it to his mother. His mother, you know, raised her till he got married again. And it's like I used to tell my son, you know, to try to explain to him about his father, you know, not caring anything about him, was that some men, you know, had love for a child like a mother, that mother's love is the greatest love. But some men don't have any of that, and some women don't have it. But some men have a great mother love. And I don't think it's to gender, you know. And then there's children that don't have any parents at all. And you can look at history and see what a lot of orphans and all like that, illegitimate children, have achieved in their lifetime. They might not have had a good life, but I would like to give an example. Now, my son, his best friend when they were growing up that lived out here, he was always smart. He was just a brilliant kid. She had three children. The father was nothing to do with them. He wasn't in prison, but he just, you know, that's the way it was. And anyway, they were all smart in school. Now, my son always said he was almost a genius, you know. He didn't apply himself a lot. Now, they told me his test and all that he was very smart, but he was just, but this guy, his best friend at that time, he was always making, he would just not be happy if he didn't make straight A's or whatever the highest grade was. And when he was in his teens, he got, he was like Cassie, he got all of his college paid. And it, guess where he went? West Point.
Yeah.
And he graduated with highest honors. And it's got nothing to do, it's, you know, with the, it's like we're brainwashed over here. I talked to a politician that we had here. She was talking about, she, you know, about all the children that didn't have their parents, you know, or didn't have but one parent. And I told her, it's got nothing to do with that necessarily. It's, that's the ideal to have two parents, but I know a lot of two-parent families where their children have wound up in jail. And I even, one guy grew up with his, he killed his son. They got in a big argument, and he shot his son to death, one of them.
Oh, Jesus.
And that, you know, it's got nothing, you know, it's just so crazy. We're so brainwashed in this country. People are to believe just because you know, or without, and sometimes you have to go without and all. I could tell you a lot about that. But anyway, I just wanted to stand up for the children who are born that they can't have, it's not anything that they did. And a lot of them have turned out mighty good. Probably most of them. We just hear about the ones that didn't, but how many of the ones who have two parents do you hear about too?
They turn out better when they can eat regular meals. They turn out better when they've got a roof over their head, Juanita. They turn out better when they've got a viable school system that can give them the skills they need to go forward in the world. And we have to understand that upstanding, fine, God-fearing, Christian, right-wing Republicans oppose all of those things. They oppose public housing. They oppose school lunch programs.
Uh-huh.
They oppose education funding, hence their focus on vouchers and private schools. Everything that contributes to the American dream of a child born in hard circumstances rising up and making something of him or herself, everything is opposed by the people who say that they are right next to Jesus.
Yeah, and I know, I wrote a long time ago, I said, how much do you love Jesus? And I was about, you know, there's a little boy, you know, that lives down the street and he doesn't have enough to eat and all, and I said...
Oh, no. Juanita, I didn't do that. That was not me. But she's so right, Juanita is. But that's how the right wing operates. They have to have an other that they can hate. On top of having an other that they can hate, they have to make sure that the other remains in a position of profound economic disadvantage so that they can make sure that the other stays where it can be conveniently pointed at. Look at them over there. See, it ain't got no... What was that quote again? Oh, do let's go back to Norm Roach. Let's see. Where is it? This is... Yeah, don't blame the school. It's not the union's fault. It's not the school system's fault. It's not the system. You start with that 70% out of wedlock birth rate. Who told Norm Roach that the birth rate is 70%? Maybe it is. But since it's being mouthed by a right winger, I'm willing to bet that it isn't. You see the distinction? Of course. Of course. So we have that. And then, of course, we also have a little something else. Going back to the Sandusky issue. And once again, remember that we started the program with someone making the argument that, well, the conservative broadcasters aren't name callers and they don't want people to die. Well, it's not so much. Sure would be a lot easier if the right wing could do this sort of thing without engaging in outright lies, but no. I've warned you, not warned you, but I've told you that it's coming, and I've told you you're going to hear more of it. Here's another iteration of the Jerry Sandusky was a Homer sectional, and it's and the reason little children get raped is because those Homer sectionals are just that way. Notice that the right wing can't create a boogeyman or can't deal with an issue without creating a boogeyman. It's got to be those, they, them, the other. Let's see if this is what I think it is.
Or Tim in San Diego, we go back to the phones, and you're next. Great to have you with us, sir. Hello.
Hi, Rush. I want to go quickly because I hope we'll have a few minutes at the end. I want to tell you my little theory that I think Apple products turn their users into liberals. But if I can, I'd like to take a stab at the elephant in the room that you
Museum
mentioned regarding
quality.
Jerry Sandusky.
Yeah, okay.
I think that the thing that you said everybody's afraid to mention is that we're always told that homosexuals are not pedophiles. But in this case, he sure was, and the same thing with Michael Jackson. Now, is that what you had in mind?
No, not pedophiles, but it's. I do think it's the elephant in the room that is never called a homosexual problem or scandal or what. See, the reason there is a very powerful political gay movement, and it's oriented towards supporting the Democrat Party. Not every, just like in every segment of society, not every gay person is a predator, just like not every man is a predator, like the feminists tried to say. Every group of people has its own bad actors. But because the political aspects of homosexuality, which they've got a very powerful lobby, and they're liberal, and they support the Democrat Party, they succeed in stifling conversation about it.
Really? They're succeeding in stifling conversation? Because it sure doesn't sound like conversation's being stifled. This drug-addled old gas bag is rattling away quite nicely, isn't he? And he's certainly a member of the 1% media. Just like CBS, just like ABC, just like CNN, just like Fox, just like NBC, just like. Isn't it funny that these right-wingers complain that they're being stifled at the same time that they're screaming at the top of their lungs? I couldn't do that. Honest to God, I couldn't do that. I think I would be physically incapable of doing that. But these people, like Norm Roach, are shameless. So Limbaugh, the oxymoron, knows that he is heading onto shifting sands. You'll hear what I mean.
And so you don't dare mention it. People don't mention it. They don't want the. It's like not mentioning showing cartoons of Muslims. You just don't go there because they wreak havoc on you, and it's a path of least resistance. But yeah, it's not so much pedophilia. That's what this is. But it's that Sandusky has to be. He's a gay guy. Nobody's
mentioned. See, Flimball has to be careful here. Because the stuff that Sandusky is accused of having done, suffice to say that Rush Limbaugh took an all-boys weekend trip to the Dominican Republic and took with him a bottle of illegally prescribed Viagra. You do the math. This has got to be really awkward for Flush.
In that aspect, because it's just too dangerous, and the reason why is because of the power of the gay lobby, which is very leftist. But I don't want to be misunderstood. Sandusky.
Okay. He doesn't want to be misunderstood. This should be fun.
Not represent all of homosexuality, just like the.
Well, you know, he's right. Jerry Sandusky does not represent all of homosexuality. In point of fact, Jerry Sandusky does not represent any of homosexuality. Jerry Sandusky represents pedophiles. Jerry Sandusky is marginally straight with a profound predilection for sex with children. One may make the argument that he did what he did with the little boys because the little boys were who were available to him. Remember, the Second Mile Foundation was set up to help disadvantaged youth, not disadvantaged boys. Had he been able to have a naked 9-year-old girl in the Penn State football showers? Guess what? Yeah. Jerry Sandusky is not representative of all homosexuals. You know why Rush had to say that? Because before he was America's truth detector, before he was El Rushbo, the man who, to call up the image of My Fair Lady, the man who taught him to walk and talk and act just like a blooming lady, so to speak, taught him which fork to use with the shrimp, how to dress, what shoes would go with which suit, in other words, and never to wear a brown suit, even though Ronald Reagan was fond of them. The man who taught him how to move through polite society without looking like the flyover rube that he was, and I say that being a flyover rube, was a gay man. And there's no debate about this. The man is since dead. And it is no aspersion to cast upon him that he took Flush Flimball under his wing and taught him the finer points of sartorial success and introduced him to some of the right people in the right places. These are all verifiable facts. So Flush has to be careful about going after gay people generally. But he also desperately needs to cast the Penn State scandal within the confines of homosexuality, because that is how he and many other right-wingers are going about the business of protecting the 1%. You think there aren't some very, very wealthy
pedophiles out there. And even though Flush is very, very wealthy in his own right, he still worships the money. He still doesn't have enough. He still hasn't gotten the memo that they don't hook up U-Hauls to hearses. So he's got to be a little careful.
But I don't want to be misunderstood. Sandusky does not represent all of homosexuality, just like the priests in the Catholic Church don't represent all of homosexuality.
But the thing is, this is a sin of omission. This is a lie that is a lie because of what wasn't said as opposed to what was. The priests in the Roman Catholic Church also have nothing to do with homosexuality. They have everything to do with pedophilia. And there is a gulf between the two that you could not bridge. You could not bridge it with a span a million miles long.
Aberrant criminals in heterosexual society don't represent all heterosexuals, but because the gay lobby is very powerful, people don't go there, people don't address it, they don't talk about it, and as such, an element of the problem never gets dealt with.
That's, I agree.
That's my only point.
No, I agree, and what you're saying is that it's a...
Whoever this Tim in San Diego is, this is a live one. This is the kind that just sort of makes... If you're into that confrontational radio, letting the wackos on the air kind of thing, which I definitely am not. But if you're into that and for-profit 1% radio is so addicted to this model, oh, you live for these guys. Yeah, I wanted to tell you about how Apple turns people into liberals. I wait all night for calls like these.
Small percentage, although if... it turns out that Sandusky was pimping out children to big money donors, you have a whole ring of gay pedophiles, but that doesn't fit the template.
Well, there are people alleging that, but I haven't seen it alleged officially. I've seen it alleged by some journalists. That's not part of the grand jury report, is it?
No, that was.
I don't think it is. There are
people. He's guessing at it. He hasn't read it.
That Sandusky was pimping them out to donors, to big time Penn State donors. That is a story that's out there. I haven't mentioned it because you just did, but I haven't because it comes from fringe elements of media.
Okay. Now, my main point was about Occupy Wall Street. Now that they have threatened to burn down Macy's, they have their own rape rooms. They walk.
What, Edith? What?
They've got their own rape rooms?
Jesus!
Oh my God, Becky. Yeah, as David in Tennessee notes, Flush sounds way uneasy just saying the word pedophile. Close to home there, El Flushbo? My friends? Oi. So let's take a little break. I'm put in the mind of a song that I've always loved, and I actually get the occasional request for it once in a while. Yeah, let's do. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and now you know where that line comes from. I wait all night for calls like these.
I'm less good than night, white, hello, Baton Rouge. Won't you turn your radio down? Get the 7 seconds delay we use. Of men in the trees, your for Trump's legislation.
we know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
12 past the hour, this final hour of this final program of the week. Friday on the front porch, I'm Bob Kincaid. I told you I'd get requests for that song. The subject line says nothing but Belzone. And then a whole bunch of big blue exclamation points. Or as they said where I grew up, explanation points. No text, says Kate. Sitting out a snowstorm. Thanks for taking my mail. I wait all night for emails like these. Thanks, Kate. David, noting that that last Flush Flemball clip, further noting that stuttering, spluttering elocution tells me he is making sweat like nobody's business. That man was so scared. So scared he'd say the wrong thing. Oh, exactly. He knew. He knew he was in a minefield. A couple of things have developed at Occupy Wall Street in the past day or so. I don't know if you saw the video of former Philadelphia police Captain Ray Lewis. Go look for it if you haven't. It's pretty profound. Him, a former police officer, talking about what the police are within the scope of this whole tableau. Well, he was arrested. Former member of the Philadelphia Police Department. Here are some comments from a police website where you have to be an actual cop to be able to comment.
Lewis, thanks for adding to the problem by tying up police resources. I'm sure the NYPD could be dealing with other shit than dealing with your antics. Show some respect to your fellow brothers in blue. Captain Lewis no doubt believes his remarks are true. It's too bad that he's become so indoctrinated that he feels the way he does. On the other hand, he's a terrible example of what he chooses to represent. He was part of what he derides for a career and a good retirement. He's truly hypocritical and does not deserve to wear that uniform anymore, regardless of his past service. He has dishonored it and deserves his arrest. Let him wear prison blues for a few days now. If he actually believes that police are just workers for the 1%, that they don't even realize they're being exploited, then why would he be wearing a uniform that is a representation of this exploitation? Answer, he is crazy! My department supplies uniforms, and thus the city owns them. Upon retirement, you have to turn in all your equipment issued. They would be seizing the uniform and possibly charging him if this happened in my city. Must be off his... Maybe he's off his meds. Must have been a great boss to work for. Fascism is fascism. Thanks, Spike, for sending that along. Also arrested recently, as in recently, the president of the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, Mary Kay Henry. She stepped up and showed her solidarity, getting arrested with hundreds of other people during protests in New York City. Tens of thousands of 99%ers marched across the Brooklyn Bridge in New York last night. Mary Kay Henry was arrested. Who among us of a certain age has not seen, well, especially if you're a film buff, and I am. For a long time, one of the most memorable film characterizations was that of, I believe, was it Charles Laughton who played Quasimodo? The Hunchback of Notre Dame was a staple even in the silent film days. But it's when they get into talkies and you can see the pathetic misanthropic, deemed misanthropic Quasimodo standing in the cathedral yelling, "Sanctuary! Sanctuary!" that it all sort of comes home. That concept of sanctuary is a very real one inside Christian circles. It has been used, for instance, to protect undocumented immigrants from the pernicious grasp of governments driven by bigotry in this country. Now sanctuary has made its way to New York City and has taken Occupy Wall Street under its wing. A number of churches in New York City are sheltering protesters who can no longer stay in Zuccotti Park. Among other places, about 46 protesters spent Wednesday night in the United Methodist Church of St. Paul and St. Andrew. And there are no reports of the Occupy Wall Street protesters being anything but respectful. You cannot say the same for the cops. According to church officials, two police officers, one later identified as belonging to the intelligence division, asked to use the restroom, but instead entered, quote, entered the sanctuary, one remaining near the door, while the other advanced down the aisle, apparently counting the demonstrators in the pews. Then one officer went downstairs to a homeless women's shelter and asked for information about who was sleeping there, without identifying himself or showing his badge. The church's Reverend James Carpen called the police actions invasive. He said, it is disconcerting that they would actually enter the sanctuary. Here we had offered hospitality and safety, which is our business as a church. It just felt invasive. He continued, they are welcome to come in if they just say who they are. We have never had that kind of issue with the police before. Usually they are very respectful of church-state issues. Usually. But where the well-being of the 1% are concerned, all bets are off. Understand that. Church officials also noted that two other police intelligence officers had visited earlier in the day, saying they were following up on an anonymous report of vandalism. Actually, an anonymous report of vandalism, which the church said wasn't made. the officers warned Associate Pastor Sean Sargent. They didn't want anything to happen to the church. That it was a risk to have protesters sleeping there.
Yeah, I'd sure hate for anything to happen to your nice church here, Pastor. You know, having this Occupy riffraff sleeping in your pews. Yeah, you think they're pews now. Yeah, wait till these Occupy people are done with it. That'll really be pew.
Judson Memorial Church said several plainclothes police officers had entered the hall where about 100 protesters were sheltering, but elected not to ask them who they were. That church is led by Reverend Michael Ellick, who said, "We thought if the police want to come in, then let them spy. Then let them look." Because if you really, really believe... if you really, really believe in the teachings of the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, then you have to do what they're doing. Any choice you might think you have is gone. I was hungry, and ye fed me. I was naked, and ye clothed me. Right? Love your neighbor as yourself. This is the great commandment, the law, and the prophets.
Say, you don't want this here riffraff messing up your nice church there, Padre. Sick bastards.
Oh, yes, thank you, David. It was Charles Lawton, Sir Charles, who did that fine early hunchback. He would be quoted later, notes David. Any role requiring that level of torture via makeup was never considered again. It was a heck of an early makeup job.
Sanctuary. Sanctuary. There ain't no sanctuary here, hunchy. You one of them occupiers? Yeah, I'll ring your bells.
To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, I was, I mean, it's interesting, you know, you're starting to hear, you know, different policy people and economists now talking about, oh, by the way, you know, the creditors in this country need to have a massive haircut now that the deleveraging of the household debt is the main thing holding the economy back. It's like, hallelujah. And, you know, they bailed out the, you know, the sort of beholden to the creditor is never going to get this economy right. So it's interesting that you're starting to hear various people talking about, you know, they're going to have to figure out some way of reducing principal and, you know, these bondholders are going to have to take a loss. And, I mean, it's shocking to hear because, you know, I just think shit must be getting really desperate if you're having those voices coming out.
Will they be?
It's in the financial media where I'm reading this stuff, but it's Reuters and, you know, stuff like that. And it's different analysts who was singing another tune a few years back. That's why it's interesting because now they're talking this. So... because the housing depression, and that's what it is. It's not getting any better. I don't mean to come on just talking these gibberish.
No. That's fine. That's fine.
That the haircut is creeping over on this side of the old pond. And speaking of the other side of the pond, did you happen to look at that video I sent you?
I did.
I mean, now that dude is not exactly kosher. He's a bit dubious, I hear, but... That clip just had me rolling because I was like, damn, you know, the European Parliament is the most surreal institution anyway. So looking at that, you're like, you know, it's sort of, you know, the supranational organization, there it is. And it's, at this point, it's real creepy, you know, because,
Well, in my conversation with Jim, I noted that there's a lot to feel creepy about Europe about right now, because every time
Every time it seems to get this way, they don't just react, they overreact on a massive scale.
Well, it's interesting that the countries that are being put upon, Italy, Greece, Spain, and Portugal, hello, what do they all have in common? They've all lived under fascism very recently and total political chaos. And, you know, putting a bunch of technocrats in charge, I don't really know. I just think it's just so creepy if you have any kind of love or understanding of history, what's going on. Because Germany, and I hate to say it, is like, who needs a sword? Who needs an army?
Because they're going to do it with...
With you know, whatever.
With a pen?
You know, with zeros. But the problem with Germany, though, is that while they bask in their, high-minded, keeping their house in fiscal order, no inflation, blah, 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 they've passed that on to the periphery countries. You see? Because since they're all under the Deutschmark, I mean the Euro.
Kind of easy to conflate the two, I'm afraid.
Well, Germany is just in charge right now, and
or maybe we can conflate the two and just call it the Deutsche Frank.
Right. Anyway, so that's why it was funny when that dude was making his little speech.
Well, let's if you don't care, yeah. let's share that so everybody can know where we are.
Okay. Co-president of the Europe of Freedom and Democracy, Nigel Farage. The floor is yours.
Well, here we are on the edge of a financial and social disaster. And in the room today, we have the four men who were supposed to be responsible. And yet we've listened to the dullest, most technocratic speeches I've ever heard. You are all in denial. By any objective measure, the euro is a failure. And who is actually responsible? And who's in charge out of you lot? Well, of course, the answer is none of you, because none of you have been elected, none of you actually have any democratic legitimacy for the roles that you currently hold within this crisis. And into this vacuum, albeit reluctantly, has stepped Angela Merkel. And we are now living in a German-dominated Europe. Something that the European project was actually supposed to stop. Something that those that went before us actually paid a heavy price in blood to prevent. I don't want to live in a German-dominated Europe, and nor do the citizens of Europe. But you guys have played a role. Because when Mr. Papandreou got up and used the word referendum, or Mr. Wren, you described it as a breach of confidence, and your friends here got together like a pack of hyenas, rounded on Papandreou, had him removed and replaced by a puppet government. What an absolutely disgusting spectacle that was. And not satisfied with that, you decided that Berlusconi had to go. So he was removed and replaced by Mr. Monti, a former European Commissioner, a fellow architect of this Euro disaster, and a man who wasn't even a member of the Parliament. It's getting like an Agatha Christie novel, where we're trying to sort of work out who's the next person that's going to be bumped off. The difference is we know who the villains are. You should all be held accountable for what you've done. You should all be fired. And I have to say, Mr. Van Rompuy, 18 months ago when we first met, I was wrong about you. I said you'd be the quiet assassin of nation-state democracy, but you're not anymore. You're rather noisy about it, aren't you? You, an unelected man, went to Italy and said, this is not the time for elections, but the time for actions. What in God's name gives you the right to say that to the Italian people?
Thank you.
Thank you. Forgive me saying it, Sandra, but is there something just a wee tiny bit Churchillian in that little speech?
Well, is he wrong? This is the thing. And listen, we all want to be, you know, I did a lot of studying of sort of European systems. There's a lot to be to admire about it. So it's very disconcerting to hear that, oh, wait a minute, Germany's again? You know, in any form, it's really frightening because I don't care. I don't care.
No, I can hear in that man's words, and you say, I guess, that he's a little dodgy. I'm going to have to read up now.
He had some messed up things to say about what was going on in, you know, during the riots in, you know, his home country of
Then he's getting more Churchillian by the moment. Because in what he says there...
Edmund Burke type, I would say. Let's just say that.
Well, I was just going to say that in what he says there...
The Hun is marching with its iron-fisted boot across Europe again.
Well, he's been a Euroskeptic since the beginning. That's why it's, you know, funny.
But you know far more about this than I do, Sandra. Is the Euro Parliament much more than a debating society? I mean, does it have the power that he described?
Well, they did some... let me see if I get this right. The Lisbon Treaty altered the democratic... what little of a democratic structure there is. I think part of the European Parliament, you know, sends people over there from each country that are actually elected. So it has some democratic traditions to it, but they don't really have any, it doesn't go back to the home country, sort of. It's just a weird setup. I mean, a lot of the European project is just really illiberal. It's undemocratic. But that's a part of the agreement that the countries made in order to have the union. I don't mean the monetary now. I'm talking about the 27 nations that make up the European Union.
Right.
Let's forget the monetary component for a minute. There are certain things like immigration and trade that sovereignty has been given over in order to, you know, have the benefits of being a union, right? And the European Parliament functions in that capacity, you know, controlling pooled resources, you know, stipends and stuff like that. So it has a fair amount of power, but the power that's being wielded now is, like he said, it's bullshit. That whole replacing whole governments with bankers, hello? Come on, man. You know, they're still rioting. I mean, Italy is definitely boiling over. Spain, the man was begging for help from the IMF the other day. I was like, damn, because their borrowing cost was near 7%.
Well, can we talk a minute about a time frame, Sandra? What?
Oh, no, a lot of people are predicting, you know, within a year or something, some madness. But the problem is, you know, who can comprehend that? Because we need to always think of these counterparties and these derivatives now that are, like, so embedded in all this. I guess that's the big worry, is it'll be some sort of...
what happens if a whole bunch of European countries belly flop on the euro? And if I understand you correctly, that's basically belly flopping on the Germans.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. And that's the unspoken word about this all. I mean, and so...
And then if that happens, granted, the Germans have a less admirable than it used to be social safety net. But what happens to the German economy if everything tanks around it?
Well, that's the thing. They're not immune to it. That's why the way they're behaving is really bizarre. Because they're the ones that are, like, refusing to backstop the debt. Now, you've seen a lot of purchasing because the yields soar towards 7, and then they come back down a little bit. But that's because the European Central Bank is stepping in and monetizing debt. Now, that is not part of the mandate of the treaty. This is the thing. They're now operating wholly undemocratically, way outside of the treaty.
They're in completely uncharted territory, aren't they?
And they're in territory where the Germans are freaking out because, see...
Well, that's kind of where I want to take it, and I'm sorry. I'll continue in a moment, please. But that's where I want to take this inquiry. The German social welfare state has a permanent but supported unemployed underclass. Am I correct?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to get too into the minutiae because I don't really understand.
No, but
I read a paper on just how vulnerable the working poor is in Germany. It is not the sort of, gleaming model you might think it is. And it's just really hanging on by a string, because the grand bargain was to work for lower wages and to be sort of compensated with job security and, you know, a reasonable safety net. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the question that I'm working toward is, if the euro belly flops, and that has a ripple effect on Germany, and Germany already has a sort of permanent underclass, underemployed, unemployed, and that number goes up beyond Germany's ability to cope with it, isn't the table being set for some for a little morality play that we've already been to a couple of times?
Well, yeah, no, I think that the thing is, I think Germany's, you know, economic power is, you know, it's pretty, they're like a, you know, they're a surplus nation. The problem is that they rely on the system that they have had a hand in, what they've benefited from, that was, you know, created to keep them at bay. But it all kind of changed when the unification, that's why I was going back to the Iron Lady and her comments about it. You know how I hate to say it, but she was, yeah, the unification is sort of was the game changer.
Well, you noting positively anything from Margaret Thatcher has about the same existential quality to it as me having to confess that Timmy Tebow is winning in the NFL.
No, but I'll be watching Miss Meryl Streep playing, bitch, though. I'll tell you that right now. I can't wait to see that movie.
She is the woman of a thousand faces, and it will be an amazing film. It can't help but be.
Oh, I saw a trailer, and it looks, you know, they get so much hate about that movie, so that's why I want to see it, because the family members and the...
Oh, really? The Thatchers are hating on it already?
Yeah, they're not too pleased with it, but nevertheless, let me go back to basically, but Germany's in a really precarious position, because they're sort of falling back on the runaway inflation of Weimar. They should be worrying about the austerity of Brüning, and they seem to be missing that period, because that's what they're doing. They're not, the inflation isn't a problem, but I don't know, I can't believe they seem to be falling, according to Krugman too, he writes about this, they're falling into the same trap of the 30s, not the 20s. The 30s.
Wow.
But this, you know, hey, listen, this is all speculation. But what's not speculation is that these poor countries are in some sort of, if I can quote the freak we just heard, an economic prison. And it's a good analogy, because they're trapped under a currency that they have no control over. And the currency is being dictated to them by the Bundesbank.
And you know, with regard to that clip we heard, Sandra, I and this happens every time I watch Question Time or any deliberative body that appears to be trying to function. Can you, in your wildest imagination, Sandra, imagine either a Jim Inhofe or a Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Third saying anything one-tenth as informed or cogent as what came out of that man's mouth?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, you know, just having him stand up and debate one of our ones, yeah, I just shake my head.
It wouldn't be fair. You'd call the fight before the first bell.
You know, and it's interesting the sort of back and forth that's going on between, I can barely look at his face, Cameron and Merkel. You know, she's making demands on England, like they have to step up too, because as she puts it, you know, they stand to lose. I mean, it's just Merkel. You're like, Jesus, I'm sorry. I just been thinking, damn, homegirl ain't no joke. And it's getting scary about a month. Okay, it's getting scary about a week.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we need somebody to go over and rub her damn neck or something.
No, because, you know, after looking at those Benetton photos, you know, Obama's looking hella effete, so I'm not relying on his ass. Did you see those photos?
No.
Benetton has some new ads.
Oh, that one. Yeah. Of him
kissing different. Yeah, anyway, but he's looking a bit of feet, bottomish.
Well, the thing that threw me about that, if Benetton, and I understand why Benetton does these ads. You know, I saw the one of the Pope kissing the imam from the Institute in Cairo. And the Vatican had a sure enough purple polka-dotted blue scream and hissy over it.
Well, and that one looked real. You know, the thing about the imam from Cairo, I said, damn, that's a good-looking dude. He hella butch. I said, he looked good.
But the thing that grabbed me is if Benetton wanted to do a U.S. one, why Photoshop Barack Obama onto Hugo Chavez? Why not just take the picture of George Bush putting a wet, juicy one on the Saudi dude's mouth?
Well, yeah, that's for real. They don't need a Photoshop.
That really happened.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I mean, I'm not one of these weirdos that has a hissy over a couple of guys kissing on a soap opera. They're in a homophobic bone in my body. But I tell you what, I felt like spiders were crawling on me when I saw Bush kissing that Saudi.
Yeah, that was well special, you know what I mean? Oh, my God. It's too much. Yeah, anyway, so, you know, the situation in Europe, I guess as long as the central bank is doing their unconstitutional or untreaty-like backstopping, I don't know how long it'll limp along for, but there is something really wrong there.
But the euro's dead, right?
I don't know. It's not looking too good because they won't take the next step, which is deeper integration. Either break up or
United States of Europe.
Yeah, it's going to be Germany. It's just going to be Germany and its member states. Hey, what else? How else can we define it? I don't really know.
Oh, I don't know. 1,000-year Reich, maybe?
No, and so you got David Cameron. You know, he looking fisheye and all that, and they got a history. What? And the channel is still in between that shit.
Well, and dude was standing there saying, you know, there has been some bloodshed over this stuff.
No, I shouldn't laugh because it's serious. With the sort of pain that's going to be inflicted on all the people in the different European countries, you know, that's, you know what that breeds, what you were talking about earlier with the right wings and stuff, especially in those Amsterdam, Denmark, those countries. It's just a hotbed of that bullshit.
And see, I guess I'm just sort of sleepwalking, Sandra, because wasn't it a year or two ago that we had that study showing that Danes are the happiest people on the planet?
Happy.
Right, but the Danes are the happiest people on the planet at the same time that they're going to their little fascist the coffee clutches?
Yeah, hey, listen, the scaly Scandinavian country that I spent some time in was Finland, which I enjoyed immensely. When I came, the first thing I noticed was, oh, wow, this is me, because I'm a complete weirdo. The jewelry stores had jewelry in the window, and it was closed at night. That was my first impression.
Oh, just left them there?
Yeah, and it just went completely weird from that, because I was there for 2 weeks.
Where's the glass cutter?
Right, I went to Lapland, you know, which was amazing, and the Finns, they drink. I mean, my God, I thought I could drink. No, man, that was it. I was under. But anyway, so I only went there, so I haven't visited any other Scandinavian countries. But
well, you know, I get emails periodically from our buddies Scott in Sweden and Michael in Norway. And after the story of the manifest horror of the Texas judge beating the daylights out of his daughter, Scott wrote back and said, no, I haven't seen it yet, Bob. At this point, I'm not sure I want to.
Yeah.
And said, almost to a person, the entire Swedish countryside would be aghast and horrified and wonder why that man was still walking around free. Because it is illegal to beat your children in most Scandinavian. It's illegal to spank them.
Yeah, well, you know it's illegal to spank them in New Zealand, which I didn't realize they had passed, because it certainly wasn't, when I was in New Zealand, it wasn't the case. So they must have did that recently, you know. I'm always amazed when states actually implement that sort of stuff, because of where we live, it's just unthinkable, right? It's just no way you can even imagine something like that.
Right, and we understand that the reason for that is because there are people, you know, just like they say, well, it says in the Bible we're supposed to hate the homos. Well, they say, it says in the Bible we're supposed to beat our children.
Well, no, but that just flies in the face of, you know, our sort of fake love of freedom. So you would never have that sort of nanny state behavior in this country, right? Anyway, I have to ask you, did you hear about Syracuse? I mean, it's all...
Yeah, I did, and I'm glad you brought it up because I hadn't gotten around to it. And what I found particularly interesting was Syracuse head basketball coach Jim Boeheim's response to it.
Oh, what was that? Yeah, I only caught a headline. I was like, wow.
Well, a Syracuse assistant basketball coach has been accused of having molested over a period of years one of the ball boys.
This is an assistant coach, right?
Right. One of the ball boys, and it happened a number of years ago. We can expect this kind of thing to be happening in the wake of the Penn State horror because the victims coming out in that case will empower other victims to speak up as well.
Exactly. I mean, that's what happens because, I mean, you know, you're so imbued with so much shame trying to deal with that as a victim. So, yeah, I expect to see more because people are going to use this as an opportunity to, you know, step up and get some sort of redress.
So Jim Boeheim responded to it by saying, you know what, this is sickening. That person who's making that accusation is a filthy liar.
Yeah, okay, well, they must be so petrified in the sporting world right now that you're going to hear that kind of stuff, I'm sure, you know. But where you know, it's such a pervasive, sick little situation. You know it's all over. You know it's not everywhere, but you know it's elsewhere. Let's just say that.
It's, yes.
Because the number of victims, number of people who deal with that in life is so numerous. I mean, with women, it's like one in three. I can't tell you, every other friend of mine has horror stories. You understand what I'm saying? You just deal with it.
And I have been places, you know, from time to time, just being the smart ass that I am, I will holler into the microphone, Uncle Daddy! Well, that phrase comes from a real place, Sandra. I was in the front yard of a home one time.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And we knocked at the gatepost. We weren't delivering the watchtower or anything. We knocked at the gatepost, and a little boy went running in and said, Uncle Daddy, there's some men here to see you.
No, listen, that is sort of the evening toaster or whatever. I can't believe you.
Oh, I don't think I've ever won a toaster.
Uncle Daddy?
Yes, Uncle Daddy.
And with all the implications that is, that's what you're telling me?
Yes.
Oh, my God. See?
And it is all over. And it's not just Appalachia, and it's not just Happy Valley, which is also in Appalachia. It's not just Syracuse. It is all over this country. And I have a feeling we're going to be seeing a lot more of it. Witness the scurrying and scrambling around that you're seeing. Joe Paterno sold his interest in his $500,000 house to his wife for $1 plus love and affection last July. Really?
Yeah, no. And what's with the lung cancer? I mean, I don't mean to be, you know, it's horrible because of where we're living now. I'm so cynical. I'm like, oh, what is that? Sympathy cancer? I'm sorry. I know it's horrible to say. Why are we just hearing about it now? And it wasn't mentioned he was still talking about coaching. How do you coach with lung cancer? Sorry.
See, if you do, it's because it's a teeny tiny thing that they've caught on an annual exam, and you're getting some low-dose chemo to keep it from growing and spreading. At 84, you know, the cure for cancer is often worse than the disease.
Oh, okay. So that could be the explanation, because it all just sounds, I guess because the whole setup is so fishy, I'm sort of having a hard time hearing anything from there. But, you know,
but,
I have to say...
No, go ahead.
No, I have to say that the Tim Tebow thing is really doing my head in. Help, Bob.
Can't.
help.
I had an email from our buddy Todd today. Ruined my dinner.
What was it?
He sent me a graphic. I may have to send it to you. You will not be okay. It's the new. It is the new Denver Broncos logo.
Oh God! Yeah, no, because it's just. This is all such a nightmare that this dude is.
Have you ever seen the? Have you ever considered what it would look like if the Denver Broncos logo did the Tebow? You know, with the kneeling and the. Yeah, that.
No, but the sort of the cult of personality around this kid is well weird, and it's just yuck. I don't know. It's just something yucky about it because you can just see the vast brainwashed crowds of it. I mean, they're so. It just seems really odd. But I give it to old Fox. You know, shit, I guess he'd work on what he got.
Well, not just that. He picked out the right time of the season to be doing this.
Is their schedule week for, I mean, are they going to go to the playoffs? Help.
Yeah, they might. I can barely fathom the idea of it. But look at the division they're playing in.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, you know. Aren't they, like, only, like, one out or something now or something real crazy?
They could get, that's the point. They could get well. Yeah, I'm sending this along to you now.
Oh, God, okay, good. But, you know, it's just too much because, I mean, he is just too much, Tim Tebow. It's like, wow, that's all I got to
say. Well, the fact of the matter is, I got to, this is tough to stomach. This is hard to say. But the guy's doing the bare minimum of what he has to do, and they're winning ball games. But again, last night it was the Jets, 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 Jets. And of course, because so much of the 1% media are centered in New York, every year we have to hear some nattering nabob talk about how, well, it's going to be the Jets this year. And, in fact, wasn't some of the early babble that it was going to be the Jets and the Eagles this year?
Well, yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, right.
And ain't neither one going to make the playoffs, I don't think. Because, yeah. Well, on the one hand, what was it? Last Sunday, the Jets got their asses handed to them. You know, Tom Brady, pretty as he is. Is this yours? And then they go and... Good night, you know, with Tebow.
Yeah, no.
I mean, get it. Tim Tebow threw for 104 yards.
Wow. I mean, that's not much. And
yeah, let's see. I'm sorry, I've got it all wrong. The Jets got it 17 to. Okay, I'm looking at their schedule, and I'm wondering if I'm completely out of my mind. Here it is.
What, the Broncos?
Yeah.
Who are they playing next?
The Jets. Yeah, the Jets. Bleh. They beat the Jets 17-13.
Right. You know, end of the game type of hell, right?
104 passing yards. Tim Tebow is the leading rusher with 68 rushing yards. The leading receiver... was Mr. Thomas with 37 yards receiving. I mean, Jesus. Eight attempts for 68 yards. His long was 20 yards.
But, of course, all his cult followers, and we have to be grudgingly, I mean, he's winning.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was his rushing numbers. 8 rushes for 68 yards, a 1 TD, and a long of 20. He was 9 of 20 passing for 104 yards, no TDs, no interceptions. Yeah, this is that just don't hurt us approach.
Well, what is
But who they have remaining?
Yeah.
At San Diego, at Minnesota.
Oh no.
Home to the Bears. Home to the Patriots.
Oh, uh-huh.
At the Bills. And home to the Chiefs.
Well, okay, that's pretty tough. Because the Patriots, that should be special, and the Bears.
Oh, but no, wait a minute. See, we're, yeah, that should be, shouldn't it?
And San Diego, you know, I know they're a bit schizo, but they do have good people.
Well, they're at San Diego, and it may mean something for San Diego to be home.
Is his child bride going to be there? I'm sorry, I don't even want to start.
Don't.
That's enough. Phyllis the Rivers thing. It's like, ew. He started dating his wife when she was 12.
Yeah, I know. There's kind of a whole Jerry Lee Lewis flavor to it, isn't there?
No.
I hate myself for crap like that.
But I have a problem with men who can't, you know, why can't they date people their own age or grown-ups? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Because they can't compete. I hate to even put it in terms like that, but they can't. Or they can't relate on a. There are people there who can't. You know, it's like they said about Jerry Sandusky. He's just a jock, and jocks do that.
Well, I guess it comes in handy because you think about. Let's see, Tiger Woods. His wife was of age, and she said, "Later on, you Negro, goodbye." Kobe Bryant, his wife was 12, and she's still with him. So maybe it does pay dividends.
God, I was watching a Family Guy repeat last night, and Agnes and I both about came unglued. The Peter Griffin, he said, yeah, it's kind of like sex with Kobe Bryant. Whether you want it or not, it's going to happen. I was not well.
Kobe Bryant, I'll never get over the
what he likes best?
Yes, that's my thing. I'm like, oh. Let me not start. You know, look how degenerate we are. Jesus.
But I just want, there's nobody on that list that has turned Tim Tebow into a wishbone.
Well, you know, they would never play Detroit, because I would love to see that Adonikin Sue.
No, they did.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, that's where they just about turned him into a wishbone. They beat him senseless.
Oh, because I was thinking, you know, because that.
Yeah, that's where that one defensive tackle or defensive end for the Lions took him down and then Tebowed on the field.
Okay, so that was Detroit. See, I didn't know which team did that. Oh, I didn't get it. Okay, well.
But I think most of that's over with now because there's nobody with that in them in the rest of the schedule. Unless, you know, maybe it's, say, a Brian Urlacher at the Bears.
Oh, could be.
Is he still playing, or is he hurt? Or
I thought he was. It'll be amusing.
Maybe he's gone. Maybe my Bears is out of.
I don't know. Maybe it'll be amusing for Brady to just sort of pick Denver apart. One can only hope.
You hope.
Who knows? It could be. See, if he keeps winning, you know what I'm afraid of? God's doing it. You understand what I'm saying?
I have so many problems with that I can't even do justice to them with language. I just break into sort of spontaneous Tourette's when I start thinking about, you know, God ignoring starving children because Timmy Tebow needs to get in the end zone.
Yeah, well,
and I guess nobody's ever sat Timmy down and explained it to him from that perspective.
Yeah, I don't. Oh God. Anyway, so I can't. You know, I can't face the prospect of the NFL with him in the playoffs. You know, with the, it's just too much. The whole narrative is already playing in my mind, and it's doing my head in. But anyway, listen, have a good weekend.
Going to try. You too, Sandra. Enjoy the logo. It should be in your mailbox by now.
Good. I'll check it.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Before you close, says Kate, mention how much John has to pay up tonight. Kate is our chief fundraiser. John's $50 challenge was met. And for that, we are immensely grateful. Thank you very kindly for doing that. So that's the week. We will be at it again come Monday. I hope you'll be right here for more on Monday. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Time to get out of here. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next.